This episode of Ministry Monday is brought to you by CLEF, Catholic Liturgical Ensemble Formation. CLEF offers in-person and online resources for ensemble musicians, including 2025 CLEF Ensemble Workshops in Albuquerque, New Mexico in August, and St. Louis, Missouri in September. All vocalists and instrumentalists are welcome at these two-day workshops. Visit clef.life for details about the workshops and other resources. From NPM, the National Association of Pastoral Musicians, this is episode 264 of Ministry Monday.
Ministry Monday is a weekly podcast about music, ministry, and liturgy, produced by the National Association of Pastoral Musicians, or NPM. What is NPM? NPM is a national association that fosters the art of musical liturgy. The members of NPM serve the Catholic Church in the United States as musicians, clergy, liturgists, and other leaders of prayer. For more information, go to npm.org/join. Have a question? Email us anytime at ministrymonday@npm.org.
Hello, and welcome to Ministry Monday. I am your host, Amanda Bruce. If you haven't done so yet, please subscribe to Ministry Monday wherever you listen to your podcasts each week, and we thank you for joining us today. Well, the musical world, and when I say the musical world, I mean music educators, music technology, and of course, music ministers. We have been adjusting to the future of the reality of a world without finale. Finale has been a guiding post in music notation software for many musicians. It's the software I learned on in music school. But sadly, after announcing last year that Make Music, which is Finale's parent company, would no longer support new software updates, it was time to begin shopping for another option. Today's episode of Ministry Monday features the prelude to a four-part series on music notation software that NPM offered in the spring of 2024. While we invite you to watch all the sessions if you're an NPM member, as all of these are an NPM membership benefit, we offer a segment of the first episode today on the podcast, which featured a discussion on copyright licensing within the paradigm of music notation software. To put it bluntly, we ask, are we allowed to re-engrave something on music notation software for the sake of, say, a unified-looking worship aid? And if so, how do we report? We ask many more questions of Katie Deaver from One License. I want to mention also, for more information on Dorico, which is a music notation software that has become kind of the front runner in some aspects for Finale's replacement due to the discount Dorico has been offering. Check out an article written by Tony Ward about Dorico, which was just released in the July edition of Pastoral Music magazine. Pastoral Music, I will mention, is a resource that's yet another benefit of an NPM membership. Have I sold you on renewing your membership yet? We hope you enjoy this episode on music notation software and its copyright considerations. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for night one of the Music Notation Software series. My name is Amanda Bruce, and I'm the Associate Director of Marketing and Communications for NPM, and I am so happy to have you here and joining us for night one of the series. So, of course, the Music Notation Software series was born from the idea that we as pastoral musicians use software for music notation for lots of reasons, whether that's for engraving, for worship aids, whether that's for modern chant notation, whether that's for our own arrangements, things that we're composing, things that we're working on ourselves, or maybe we're using it, as we'll find out at the end of these 4 weeks, maybe to source some arrangements ourselves. So before we go through
any software, it is my disclaimer to say, and I know we've said this in some of our marketing materials, that the next 4 weeks are not sales pitches. None of the softwares that we are about to talk about for the next 4 weeks are involved, other than they are pastoral musicians who have used these softwares and who want to share some tips and tricks with you. NPM just wants to bring these tips and tricks with you and maybe a couple of extra things along the way. So, with that being said, for the next 4 weeks, we ask you to ask questions. That is the role of this entire workshop series. And so, feel free to put them either in the chat box or in the Q&A section in your webinar below. Either one will be fine. We will be sure to answer them as well. So, before we really go into the deep nitty-gritty of any music notation software, it would be beneficial for us to start with a baseline to talk about copyright licensing. And so that is why Katie Deaver from One License is with us this evening. So, Katie, hi, how are you this evening?
Hi, Amanda. I'm doing really well. I'm so excited to be with you all tonight. Excited to hear the questions that you have. As Amanda said, it's an open space. We want to hear questions. Our team at One License, we do dig deep into some of these copyright questions, but we also learn more when we hear the creative things that pastoral musicians are doing in their communities. So I'm excited to see your questions and see how we can help navigate some of those tricky steps of copyright to help us all do this ministry.
Excellent. Thank you. And thank you again, Katie, for being here. So, as Katie mentioned, we are going to be addressing some copyright considerations through the lens of One License, which, of course, is the liturgical copyright licensing company for so many publishers that we use. But as we ask these questions and discuss them, again, we ask you if you have any follow-up questions for Katie, please feel free to put them in the chat box or Q&A box, as we will address as many as possible. So, Katie, with that being said, do you have anything prepared, or should I just start asking you questions right away?
I am happy to have you start asking questions and we'll see where we end up.
Okay. All right. So, of course, Katie, the focus of the next 4 weeks is copyright licensing with music notation software in mind. So my first question to you is, can music notation software be used for reformatting existing PDFs that we find on One License based on, let's be honest, maybe we want all of the fonts to match, or we want it to kind of be aligned a little bit differently in our worship aid? Is that approved and allowable given a standard license with One License?
Great question. I very much understand that we want to make our worship aids, or if we're creating supplemental hymnals, look consistent and branded. We want all of those things to line up. Absolutely understand that for sure. So the good news is for us who are trying to build these, in the United States, type settings or engravings can't be copyrighted. So really, you have a lot of flexibility with those engravings, those type settings to create and recreate whatever you have in mind. So as some examples of that, things like changing the style, the font, the size. I know a church I worked with had a particular color number that they liked our reprint to be. That at the time felt a little intense, but if that works for you and you have a specific color code that you like all of those reprints to be in, all of that is absolutely acceptable because they're not copyrighted. You don't actually need a license to do any of those engraving changes. That said, and certainly you'll learn more in this series, some PDFs or some files that you find are going to be easier for you to edit than others. In some cases, you might have an easier time creating a brand new reprint file in one of these systems, or if you're able to scan a hymnal page or something like that, all of those things are absolutely okay. The thing to be careful about, though, is to remember that you can't alter the copyrighted text or tune itself without the direct permission from the copyright holder. So we sometimes have sort of that gray area, things like word changes or harmonizations or rearranging certain things that the piece has, or creating a new voice part, all of those types of changes, you're still going to want to go get that direct permission from a copyright holder. But in terms of just that typesetting, that visual engraving, you really do have a lot of options for that since they aren't copyrighted.
So I just want to stop there really quickly and ask you then, let's just say that someone absolutely really wanted to do a reharmonization and they wanted to put that in a new engraved file. You mentioned that we would ask for permission. How would we go about doing that?
Absolutely. The easiest way is going to be to go to that copyright holder directly. If you use the One License site, most of the time you're going to see that information right on the entry so that you'll be able to know who they are and how to get in touch with them. As you're likely familiar, a lot of those individual composers maybe have a larger publishing house administering their rights for them. In a lot of those cases, what that copyright holder is really concerned about, right, is just making sure that they know how their creative work is being used. So the vast majority of composers, right, they want us to use their music. They're excited when we have ideas, or maybe we have particular voicings or instrumentation in our context that would work well. Most likely, they're going to be very eager to work with you. You should be able to find most of the contact information for them on the One License website or with just a Google search. But if you ever have trouble, you're absolutely welcome to email our team at info@onelicense.net. And we sometimes have some behind the scenes connections and can get you some direct contact info for those folks.
So it looks like, though, we are empowered, though, as pastoral musicians to reach out to those people directly first. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. And honestly, most of them will be so excited to have you do that. They like hearing how we're using their work. So absolutely.
Okay, great. So we have a great question too from a couple people. What about changing the key if you were to re-engrave?
Great question. So the best practice is still always to ask, check in with that copyright holder. Again, most of the time, they're going to be very comfortable with that. Every once in a while, we will get a copyright holder who truly believes they have found the key that this is the very best in, and they're not going to want you to re-engrave that in a different key. So best case is just to check in with them. You know, the worst thing, or like the best response you could get, is that they think you're silly for asking and they don't care at all.
All right, excellent. We have another question from someone, actually. What are the copyright concerns or consideration if I want to use a melody composed by someone else and write my own arrangement and words?
Another great question. There again, I would talk to your tune copyright holder. It's just always a good idea to start there so that they know how that creative work is going to be used. Again, most of the time, they're going to be really comfortable with that. If it's something that they really are excited about, they may even, you know, work with you and be willing to share some contract obligations or royalty payouts or things like that. So always a good idea to check with them. And honestly, probably check in with your copyright holders before you do too much work developing something like that, just in case it isn't something they're comfortable with you creating or using in your community.
Okay, great. I do see several questions from people, which is awesome. I am saving them for just a second. I just want to ask one more question before I kind of open up the floor. Maybe I should have started this one, Katie, but do you need a copyright license to do re-engraving on a music notation software?
Great question. So this is honestly the one that, when we talked a little bit about this topic, Alec Harris, our president, and I went back and forth and chatted through a little bit. So this one is a little bit of a chicken and an egg conversation, which one came first. So really, you want to think about what you're going to do with that engraving to determine what type of licensing you need. So one of the ways that we talk about this a little bit with some online things is, if I am sitting in my living room and I'm just noodling around on the keyboard and I'm kind of pulling some copyrighted tunes and it's for my own enjoyment. I'm not going to post it online. I'm not going to notate it or try to sell it or use it with my choir at church. Nothing like that. I don't really need any kind of licensing or permission for that. But if I decide, oh, hey, that was pretty great. I think my choir could do that. Now I'm going to need licensing or permission to do that next step. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe you really enjoy just playing around with engravings and creating, you know, fun engravings for yourself, and you don't sort of have an intention to do anything more with them. Probably not, right? But maybe. But really think about, is this for a worship aid? Are you creating a seasonal resource that's going to be used in your community? Then it's going to function just the way a typical reprint file does. So really, it's that use that you want to think about. And then that's going to help you determine the type of permission or licensing you might need.
Okay, great. What does, first off, let's just kind of set a baseline, because I'm sure most people who are on this webinar know, but I think it's good to just kind of set a basis of knowledge. What is reporting? When we say to report something, what does that mean?
Absolutely. So for one license, reporting is how we know exactly what to pay out a copyright holder or a member publisher on our service. So for example, if you create a worship aid and you use it in 3 Sunday services, and it's an Amanda Bruce original copyrighted text and tune, you would log into one license, report that use for 3 services, and that directly turns into money that we then would pay out to Amanda for that use. So really, it's we talk about it sometimes as voting for the music that you use and lifting up those titles or those composers. Our system has just about 234,000 titles right now. So your reports really, really do matter and show us exactly which titles are being used and how from that huge catalog of music.
Okay, so now that we've established that, what does reporting look like for music notation software engraved items that have reached all the other mile markers, have reached all the other steps, they're approved? What does reporting look like when we take a song, we don't change harmonization, we just kind of maybe re-engrave it for the aesthetics of our worship aid? What does reporting look like for that?
Yeah, the great news is it looks exactly like it does normally. So it really is just congregational reprint. If that's, you know, what you're doing, you're putting it in a worship aid, it's a supplemental hymnal. Maybe if you have really big screens and you're able to get some notation up on a screen or something like that, or a PowerPoint for something a little smaller where you're there with folks, it's all reprint. So whether you use a photocopy of a hymnal page, or you're creating your own slides by retyping the text, whether you're using the download file that's available in our system from the publisher, those all get reported the same. It's all just reprint.
Awesome, awesome. Okay, so here are a couple questions from some of the attendees so far. They're starting to kind of ask a little bit more broader copyright questions. So someone asks, a new music director that this person knows has begun to distribute files of PDF files. What licensing steps should be taken in that case?
So it's not ideal, right? Technically, our one license is going to cover the use of those congregational reprints within the context of a worship service. If I'm guessing, right, you're trying to get stuff out to your choir ahead of time, maybe, or something like that. Technically, we wouldn't have a license that would cover that. You're certainly welcome to reach out to our team. We do have some sort of tips and tricks for ways that we can help you do that. I know one of the ways that was happening, especially at the height of the pandemic, was emailing out bulletins and things ahead of time for folks. And one of the things we asked when that was more prevalent was that they be password protected. So at least there was less of a risk of those PDFs, those copyrighted texts and tunes and songs being shared more widely. So we certainly do have some ways we can help you do that, but it doesn't exactly fit in with most licensing.
Okay, all right, great. Here's another question. What are some of the considerations copyright-wise for audio practice files?
Yeah. So as Amanda said, this is not intended to sound salesy, but our practice track license, One License, is a good example of one way that you can license those tracks. So our practice track has sort of two different options. One is a master track. So that would be maybe you buy a CD from OCP and you're able to create copies of that CD to share with your musicians or your choir so that they can learn that music. Those are not ever able to be used within a worship service. They're really just for rehearsal focus. And then, so we have that with master tracks, but then also non-commercial, which allow you to make the tracks yourself. I use this quite a lot in my own context to tease out different vocal parts in choral music. So there was one of the Easter pieces we did, I'm blanking on it now, had a really tough tenor entrance. And so I made my tenors a recording of that lead-in, showed them exactly, you know, how much I was going to be able to help them and give them that starting note. And then they, you know, had those tracks and were able to run it 100 times at home and they nailed it Easter morning. So we certainly do have those options. The main thing typically is just to be sure that you're only ever using them for rehearsal, not within your actual worship service.
Okay, great. We have another specific question here from an attendee. They say, we use a We Celebrate hymnal from 2021. When it expires, can we continue to use it as long as we report each hymn as a reprint, or do we have to stop using it and get a new one?
Great question. Nope, that is just fine. So copyright is song specific, not resource or hymnal specific. So as long as, you know, whatever titles you are using are covered for copyright, you are just fine. And if you're not, I mean, if you're just going to use that physical hymnal, even if it's out of date, not a problem. You don't actually even need any licensing if you're in person just using that physical hymnal. If you're reprinting, you'll do everything the same that you do now and report that use. And then if you're online, same thing there again, you'll just report the same way that you do now, no matter how old those print resources are. Great questions.
Okay, good. Another follow-up exactly on this is that the same for Respond and Acclaim?
Yep, absolutely. So across the board, you really, you know, within reason, can pretty much ignore where you're finding a song. That copyright always stays with the song. So as long as you have permission from us or another licensing service to use a particular copyrighted song, it doesn't matter at all where you found it or where you got it from.
Great. Okay. Oh, the questions keep coming in. This is great.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Okay. So here's another one. I used the words of an Easter hymn from the new Gather hymnal. So I assume they mean Gather 3. But it was too new to teach the congregation the new hymn tune. I used a public domain hymn tune instead. How is that reported?
Nice. Great question. That's my favorite thing, right? Is when we can sort of pick and choose our text and tunes and put them together. So some of the time, our publishers realize that we're going to do that. And so they're really intentional about entering data separately. So you'll see a text only entry to report and a tune only entry to report. You probably know this already. You don't need to report public domain, and you're welcome to do anything you would like with public domain text or tunes. So in this case, I would go ahead and try and report the part that is copyrighted the way that you normally would. Once in a while, you won't be able to find, say, like a tune only entry in our system. Most of the time, our team would just tell you, go ahead and report the one that includes that copyrighted piece. the worst case scenario is that whoever holds the other half of that text tune combo is going to get one little extra royalty. Maybe you're sort of making up for someone who forgot to enter their reporting last week. It certainly doesn't hurt anything to do that. It, you know, it doesn't cost you any more to report more or less or anything like that. So as long as you're able to report the portion that you used, don't worry too much about if there's something extra attached to it in another text tune combo.
Great. Let's even go one step back and ask a question again I probably should have started with, which is, what is a public domain hymn or public domain music?
Yeah, great question. I think especially when we're talking about some of these type settings and these engravings, creating these. So good rule of thumb in the United States is 70 years after the death of the composer. That being said, copyrights can be renewed. They can change hands and then have the copyright year extended. So it can be a little bit tricky to make sure. Most of the time, copyright holders are pretty clear about when things enter the public domain. Most of the time, if you're looking for something in our system, they'll have updated that record. So you'll see public domain right on there. I think the thing to be careful of is arrangements of public domain things, especially when we're talking about engravings. So as an example, Silent Night, we know that is in the public domain, but I'm just going to use Amanda as an example again. But let's say Amanda writes a wonderful arrangement of Silent Night, and you decide that you're going to do an engraving. You can do anything you want with that public domain text and tune. But if you start to also combine some of Amanda's copyrighted pieces, that potentially is going to be a problem. And you're going to need to go to Amanda to get those permissions and to talk through some of that. So most of the time, that 70 years after the death of the composer or author is pretty safe. Different regions in the world have different copyright dates. So sometimes that can make a difference too, as we become more global and use music from other regions. So there again, when in doubt, you can certainly trust the data that's in our system, but you're also welcome to reach out and we might have additional context on when things enter public domain.
I think a good example actually to follow up on that is not just the Amanda Bruce original, but also Night of Silence by Daniel Cantor, because of course that one is so commonly used immediately after Silent Night, like almost as back to back. So like you said, if there were tweaks that someone wanted to make on Night of Silence versus Silent Night, that would be a totally different ballgame, correct?
Absolutely, yeah, great example, yep.
Okay, great. All right, great. So we have just a few minutes left with Katie. I do have a couple more questions on my end, but if you have questions, please feel free to put them in the chat box or Q&A. This is awesome so far. Awesome, awesome. So some other just basics. So you're saying, as we look at the next 4 weeks of sessions, when we're talking about software for music notation, we can change the style, the font, the size, and the color, and anything about the type setting itself, correct, when it comes to hymns?
Correct, yes, yep. No copyright in the United States, so you are good to go on all those pieces.
Okay, all right, great. And then for in-person worship services, you should report any congregational music that has been reprinted in what form? Like whenever we say reprinted, what does that mean?
Yeah, great question. So really anything that is creating something new. So if you have, say, a purchased missal or hymnal and you are only singing out of that physical book, you don't need to report anything for those in-person services. But if you're going to turn anything in that book into a PowerPoint slide, a worship aid, maybe you have a seasonal booklet. Certainly, we all just did Holy Week not too long ago. If you had a special 3 days resource or something like that, all of that is going to be considered reprint. Additionally, if you're posting services online and you're putting text or melody in those online services, that's also considered reprint. So you can kind of think of reprint as the things that we see. So whether it's, you know, something physical or up above or on the screen for something online, anything that you would see or read, that's all going to fall under that reprint category.
Okay, great. What if it's only in, say, a presider's binder?
Great question. So technically, your one license isn't going to cover anything like that. Ours are only congregational reprint. So it's very possible that other services, like worship planning type services, have those presider or leader guides as part of their service. But from the one license side, it's only going to be those congregational reprints.
Okay, great. Someone else asks too, can you explain a little bit more about why a practice track needs copyright permission?
Yeah, great question. So part of it is, again, right? So our copyright holders want to know how their creative work is being used. And especially with tracks, part of it is the being able to more closely monitor where those tracks go. So when you have, as an example, a CD from a publisher, not only is it the copyright of the text and tune, you know, that we would read on sheet music, it's also that particular recording. So it's the exact musicians who helped to sing that choral piece. And there's also copyright connected to the sound and audio folks who built that track. So because there's so many more pieces of those copyrights, copyright holders tend to want to have a little bit more control over how those are being used. Also, there again, it's a little bit different in different regions of the world. In the United States, we can't use master tracks within worship services. That's not part of our religious exemption. Other parts of the world, they can do that. And so their licensing for those tracks is a little bit different. But for ours, it really is about the focused use of how those go. They really are intended for sort of personal home use and enjoyment, and not more in that larger worship group context. Great questions.
Follow up on that, and then we have two more, and then we're going to wrap up. Follow up on that topic, though. What about practice files created in what we're going to talk about, Finales, Sibelius, etc.?
Yeah, great question. Generally, kind of the same concept. We would consider those non-commercial recordings. And there again, it's been several years since I was actively using some of these notation services. But I know that at that time, they were starting to talk about sort of levels, and some of those levels included some licensing for certain MP3s, and others didn't. Certainly the other experts will be filling you in more on some of those ins and outs. But it really, there again, think about how you're going to use a track like that. And then that will sort of help tease out the type of licensing, or maybe if you don't need licensing, it'll depend on how you plan to use a track like that.
Great. We have two more questions. So we have one here. At Easter time, I made copies of the music we sang for the choir. We own the books, but just to make it easier for the choir, for six people in the choir in particular, I made copies just to use for that one time. Is that to be reported?
So technically, since we're only congregational, if what the choir has is exactly the same as what the congregation is given, then you would just report those reprints normally. Most of the time, those choir reprints, I know I've done it for folks who struggle to hold the folder and the hymnal and write, like all of those things. And I, you know, we've talked with our colleagues at OCP and GIA, and those types of things are typically understood to be a reasonable accommodation. We don't want folks to fall when they're processing. We don't want, folks to just have all that anxiety and trying to hold on to things. But technically, in a perfect world, right, we would only give the choir what the congregation also has and then just report it normally. But certainly, again, reasonable accommodation. Same thing with large print, anything, if you ever need to make copies, just so that folks are able to see and read and utilize those, You don't technically have to report that because it's considered a reasonable accommodation. Again, you're certainly welcome to. It won't hurt anything, and it will help those member publishers just get a little more credit for the use of their creative work. So feel free to report it, but it is also not completely necessary.
Great. The last question that we have is, if you're streaming and only displaying lyrics and not the music notation itself, is there a different way to report that?
Great question. It's both reprint. So the beauty of reprint is that it really is anything. So it's notation, it's text, it's both. And it all just falls under sort of that catch-all reprint category. Hopefully that makes it easier instead of more confusing.
Absolutely, I think it does. Okay, my very last question is, if anyone has any follow-up questions, general, specific, they might want to reach out to you or a member of the team, how do they do so?
Absolutely. I would recommend emailing us at info@onelicense.net. That way we can send, you know, screenshots and give you some other resources to do additional learning. Our team is always happy to help. You're welcome to reference this webinar just so we sort of know where your question is, what thought process your question's coming out of. And we're very, very happy to assist with anything that we can.
I'm also happy to share for those who are watching live and on the replay that Katie has provided a handout with some fast tips that we discussed partially tonight and also some additional things we didn't even get to cover. And so we will be sending that tomorrow in the email to all registrants, as well as the recording to this entire webinar. So with that being said, Katie, thank you so much for being on the first part of our entire series. This is exactly the perfect way to start the conversation. So thank you, Katie, so much for your time. And thank you for all you do to support us in our work in pastoral music.
You are so welcome. Thank you so much for the invitation. And thank you for all that you all do. And I'm excited to hear more about the series. It sounds absolutely wonderful. So thank you again for the invitation.
We thank Katie, as always, for sharing her expertise and knowledge with us. For more information about this particular episode, as well as the Music Notation Software series, check out the show notes of this episode at ministrymonday.org. The recording of Hope was written by Krista Silva and produced by GIA Publications, and today's theme music was written by Aaron Schaus. Today's episode of Ministry Monday was produced by me, Amanda Bruce. That's it for today. With the Spirit's gifts empowering us for the work of ministry, we thank you for listening. Have a great week, and we'll see you back here next time on Ministry Monday.